An uplifter is
a compelling leader
who tries to breathe life and hope into people around them,
who listen and care and guide and help,
whose way of being in the world inspires,
who uplifts with humor and understanding,
who leads by example,
don't judge, vulnerable,
bold, determination,
who are here to create a better world,
who can learn and teach,
who encourages you,
who shines their light to lead other people,
who uses their best self in order to help others.
I found the life that I liked and I worked toward that.
We are all uplifters. Mwah, big love.
This is Susie Jaramillo, and I nominate Kate Tellers. She's the host and director of MothWorks, and she coaches people to tell true stories from a stage and really bring out their essence and their wonderful truth in a way that moves and brings us together. Real storytelling from real people in this day and age is just so, so, so important.
Welcome to the Uplifters Podcast. I'm Aranza Savas, and today I am joined by Kate Tellers from The Moth. Every time I say The Moth to someone, there's this amazing response where people just get sort of giddy and exclamatory in their response. And I don't know if this happens to you all the time, Kate, but for people who know The Moth, there is this deep fandom and this, I think, magical sense of connection and humanity that people found in The Moth that they'd never seen anywhere else. And so they feel like they are in relationship with you and your work. And I feel that way certainly. And I'm just so honored and excited to be here with you today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Yeah, I feel like if you know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And those people go absolutely bananas when they hear about, and I try to not introduce Moth when I'm introducing myself, because I feel like then I'm not a person. Like I'm, you know what I mean? Like I'm an association with an organization, which is lovely. I love the association and I love the organization, but I also sometimes just want to have a human conversation. And then people like flip out, or they're like, oh, storytelling for children, like fables. Is that what it is? You know, and then you have to like slowly indoctrinate them.
How do you describe what The Moth is?
It's really dependent on the context, because we're so many things. But the simplest way, and this is like my, you'll hear how canned I am sometimes when I say it, we're a not-for-profit organization dedicated to the craft of first-person storytelling. We help people tell true stories on stage, live, without notes. Those stories are recorded and sometimes appear on our podcast or radio program. We also have training programs and have released five books now, but yeah.
How long have you been a part of The Moth and its mission?
I have been on staff for 15 years, and I started, like many of us, as a volunteer. I was the one, the person on the other side, like banging on the door, being like, I will do anything. So I was a volunteer, and then I was the first podcast intern. I edited the first episodes of the podcast in GarageBand.
Oh my gosh. You are so in the fabric and the DNA of this organization, and vice versa. Now I am.
Yeah. I mean, there's such a shift when we went from live events to recording them, just because of who we had access to. Mm-hmm. And I was able to be at the organization for the pre and the post. And there was such a surge in like 2008, 2009. I mean, there always is. We're constantly, thank goodness, knock on all the wood, we've been developing new things. But in that time, when we were like five full-time people in a filthy office doing, everybody did every job, you know, like the stuff that, like I always say, I printed the freelancers 1099s, because we lived like, we had freelancers and interns and part-timers, you know, but then there was just us in this like dust box. Yeah, I was like printing 1099s. Like I should not have been doing that. But thankfully, you know, A went to B, went to C, and it worked. So
what a story there. And as I was thinking about you today, I was like, man, she was born for this job.
Are you saying that because of my name?
Yeah.
I was never a fan of my, well, I don't know if you did not have this because you have a very different name than I do, but I always hated how easy my name was to pronounce, because when teachers would do like a roster, they would go really quick. They'd be like, Kate Teller's here. Whereas with other people, they'd be like, Aran, or, I don't know, I'm making up your story, but you know what I mean? Like,
that's my story.
I wanted the teacher to like spend time and try to figure me out, but I was just like, boring Kate Teller's. Anyway, but yes, I did not like it, the name, that much as a kid. I also like didn't like the association with like fables. I've never been that type of a person, although I guess I loved fairy tales.
In what other ways do you feel like this was the place for you? I mean, 15 years is a long time to stay anywhere.
15 years is a long time to stay anywhere. Well, I'm going to say something that this is not a unique thing that I'm going to say, because I think many of us have experienced this in some way, but in many ways, the moth did maybe not save, but definitely dramatically alter the course of my life because I really believe in the work, and because, you know, the work by definition is constantly changing because we're constantly finding new stories. So I came to the moth, I was an actor, and I started doing like comedy and theater, and I did a solo show, I do cabarets, I do stand up, I do stuff like that. And I liked that. That was fun, but that was largely self-produced. So it's like day job, pour your heart out on stage. Or I would get cast in these like ridiculous shows that I would take because I was an actor, but like my heart was not in them. And at the same time, my mother was dying. So I would call my mom. I remember calling her once and being like, "Mom, I'm dressing up as a reindeer in the basement of a restaurant in Chinatown, talking about like Santa's sexual preferences. Like, I don't." And she was like, "This is your art. You have to do it. Like, stay in New York and do your art." And I did.
Go, baby, go.
I stayed and I did my art. But anyway, so there was the combination of those. So it was like day job to support sometimes the work that I didn't love. And then my mother died. And the night that she died, we all sat in her living room. She died at home and just told stories about her. And it was just so clear that like, that was what I had. She'd done amazing things and been a mother, been a professional, been a world traveler, could be described in many ways. But what we had were those stories. And I just started some sort of a quest to figure out how I could live my life and not be sort of tithing away one part of it to support something else that wasn't satisfying. But also I really doubled down on my love of stories and then happened to hear The Moth on an episode of This American Life and went to a live show and was like, "Oh, it's this. This is what I want with an audience and a person on stage. That's not like the reindeer and the tutu or, you know, even like the stand-up, which was like throw a joke, get a laugh. I was like, "Oh, this is the real thing." And then I wrote a terrible cover letter and somehow got in the door.
Couldn't have been that bad.
I mean, we found it a couple of years ago and I was like,
"That's amazing.
Why did I talk about how I'm handy with a stapler?" And like, it's the 21st century.
It worked. You just never know. I'm a big fan of write the letter. The only reason I have the apartment I have is because I wrote the letter and I said, "Please let me raise my child in this apartment, even though I can't afford it." And they said, "Okay, you can have it." And the rest is history. Second best decision I ever made, other than, you know, marrying my husband, who's a really good guy and trusted me to write these weird.
That's like the New York story. You're going to get 4,000 emails. Like, nothing we say on this podcast matters because now people know that you have New York real estate, like magic powers.
Story. I think story has the power to do everything. That's really the answer. You have the power, Kate.
I don't know.
And we'll have to swap stories at some time. I mean, this episode is about you, but I will say I can't help but relate because I moved here right after grad school with a master's in acting to be an actor.
Yeah.
And I was like, "This is going to be great." I mean, I don't really like acting all that much, but I really like humans and words. And I can't figure out any other way that an adult would do that. And I did all these really horrible gigs that I look back on and I just shake my head. My most famous one was I was pregnant and washing dishes on a talk show. And I was in some sort of like crazy relationship on the show. And my big line was, "What about the baby?" So that was about the pinnacle of my theatrical success, but not dissimilar to you. I got involved with a program that I was really inspired by and ended up staying there for 18 years and having a beautiful, surprising career that took me on a very different journey, professionally and personally, than I ever expected. As I was getting ready to talk to you, I was curious, because we're talking about your story today. Mm-hmm. Do you get nervous telling your story because you're like the guru of story?
No, one, I'm just like so in this world and I've done it enough and been a part of it enough that I've sort of seen everyone fail and everyone succeed. Not everyone, but you know what I mean? Like, you see the greats flop and you see people that for one night are the Meryl Streep of all Meryl Streeps. And I think I'm not true to myself if I'm not to some degree vulnerable. And so maybe I won't tell the most well-structured story. Stories aren't only about structure, but you know what I mean? But then secondarily, I just feel like I also feel confident enough in my skills to speak about storytelling or to observe life and communicate it as a story that I feel like I don't think I'm going to burn it down.
Yeah. I feel like for me, the most essential skill that I can rely on and trust is just being present and listening. Is there something similar for storytelling that you feel like if you're just in that mode, okay, things will happen?
Yeah, for sure. I sit in a lot of storytelling seats, so it depends on what my role is in that time. But as a storyteller, 100%, it's being present. It's noticing if something comes out of your mouth weird or the audience is different or a detail strikes you or you have a surge of emotion. Like the more present you can be with that, the better. And that's also when it's fun. And then as a listener, like a story director or someone leading a workshop, I have to, it's great because I'm like, check everything. Of course, I hear you. We all hear stories through the lens of our own experience, but like, check whatever I want to respond with, unless it's about myself, unless it's really relevant, which sometimes it is. But, you know, it's just like, go on this ride, listen to this story, go on the ride, be curious about it, what's unclear, what, you know, and of course, with my brain, I'm always like, well, I would have started here, but I'm going to put the scene, you know, but like still being present and then meeting people wherever they are. There's, you know, if they're telling a story from their own lives, they already have succeeded. And now, like, how do we, you know, explore that story, make it more truthful, make it more compelling, make it more whatever we want to make it.
I know you do a ton of story coaching and helping people find the story to tell or shape the story they want to tell. What question do you ask people to get them started on looking for a story or sort of decide, right? Our lives are full of story. So how do you help them decide where to begin?
Well, I don't have one question, but I think the thing is, and this is like so much of storytelling is to me, storytelling is like my faith. So I'm like, it applies to all aspects of life. But you know, you can't just ask someone like, tell me a compelling story. It's like that thing, like more when I was in comedy, people be like, you're a comedian, make me laugh. And I'd be like, no, but also like it's content, it's whatever. I don't want to be precious about that or trod that road. So it's really about just like asking any number of prompts. But one of the things that I always think about is great stories are born of moments that have changed you. So think about a pivotal moment in your life and to even start smaller, like what's the story that you tell at parties? Or if your life were a movie, what's one scene that you would have to have in it? We just need to start somewhere. And then you ask the questions around it and start building it out. But all I need is like some information about you. Then we'll keep going.
It's the peeling of the onion, I guess.
Totally. Yeah. And it's just like the one stake in the ground. It's not even a stake in the ground. It's a tenuous stake. We don't know if we're going to keep it. But like if you, like what you just told me that you went to grad school and then, you know, you were doing these terrible plays, I might say like, well, when was a moment where you, and you've kind of told us the low, but like, what was the high that you were seeking? What did you want? And then that would be a way to get into stakes of the story, which is important. You have to care about your story. So like, why was it so terrible that you were either using your pregnancy or in a pregnancy belly, like yelling on stage, you know, what did you want out of that? Or we might dig deeper into why it was so terrible. Cause it's not just, and I hate to speak negatively. I always use the reindeer show as an example. And it was actually a show that my friend put up. It was just the timing of it and like the stepping outside of myself and being like, why I was dancer, like, why am I in a tutu in this place, you know, this like tiny venue that no one's going to, talking about Santa and sex, which I was not connected to and still I'm not connected to. I'll stand by that. But, you know, while my mother was dying.
And in that, I hear a story of meaning and purpose.
Yeah.
And
right.
That seemed devoid of meaning and purpose for you in that moment.
For me in that moment.
I hope it was transformative for your friend. But for you in that moment, you saw it greater meaning. Do you still remember the first story you told at the Moth?
So when I started at the Moth, I'd been doing a lot of things on stage. But when I started at the Moth, I was not on stage. And then this was where the fear comes in. Once you become Kate at the Moth, then there is an expectation when you take the stage. So I remember doing a couple of slams or open mics. Like I would throw my name in Oh, and I do remember I had been a host of shows and I kept saying, I really want to host her shows. And everyone was kind of like, but you're a collie. There was a little bit of trepidation of like, what if we put Kate from the Moth up there as a host? So one night I was there as like a producer maybe, and one of the host's train got stuck and we had to start. And I started the show and it was so weird because now I've done that, I don't know, hundreds of times, so many times. But I remember being like, all right, you're called. And I did it. And I was like, I can do that, you know, even though I knew that I could. But the first time I hosted, I actually then was brought in to host a slam. It was amazing. It was so great. I was like, I've got this. And this is, I rarely talk about myself and say like, I did so well. But like, it just was like, I freaking love this organization. I have the training, as it were, to be on, like I studied improv and comedy. I know what I'm talking about. I know the values of the organization. Like I know how to communicate them. And it was just a freaking blast. And I remember at the end, our audio engineer, who I'd known for years, said, I didn't realize we had a silver bullet, I think is what he said. It was like this whole side of me that I'd kind of been like, put me in, coach, come on, put me in, but like hadn't been letting out. And now it's like such a great joy. And a lot of it is because I watched for my job 5,000 shows and I got to see these other great hosts that are still doing it to this day, do it and then bring my own self to it. You have good days and bad days, but
that's part of it though, right?
But that's part of it. The more you do, my Ophira Eisenberg, who's an amazing Moth host and comedian and amazing human being, I remember telling a story, maybe at a slam or at a different storytelling show, and just really feeling like I bombed. And she said, what is both profound and obvious is she was like, the more you do it, the less you bomb statistically. Do you know what I mean? It's not just, of course you get better, but it's also like the more you do those things, then that one terrible bomb is a smaller and smaller like pebble, you know, in the big pool. And I always think about that. And that keeps me confident that even in a slam, when you're doing like a bunch of little interstitials, even if that one didn't really work, that's one little one. And then you do another one and then the roof lifts and you feel great. And then, you know, you just keep doing it and doing it and keeping your odds good.
I was talking to somebody on the show recently and she's a coach who works with people who have ADHD. And she said that her number one principle with her clients is to train them to believe that finishing the action is the goal.
Oh, interesting.
And it's not about what are the outcomes of that, what happens as a result of that. But if we can get our focus on the doing and the completion of the step, then we allow ourselves to learn, to grow, to expand, to fail, to get stronger based on those stumbles. But without that, we're just sitting around thinking and wishing and dreaming and hoping and getting resentful about all the things that aren't happening to us.
It's true. Very true. Yeah.
You talked about how you introduce yourself and you say, I am Mothwoman Kate. Somehow that sounds weirder than I meant it to. But I'm also someone else. I'm not just a brand. How do you introduce Kate, the person beyond the brand?
Well, it's highly contextual. I'm here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. A lot of Moth fans here in the hipster neighborhood of Bushwick, Brooklyn. But a lot of the stuff that I do in my neighborhood is like I'm out with my young kids. So when I meet people, I travel a lot. So a lot of the time it just happenstance will come up to be like, oh, I was just in San Francisco. I was just in San Francisco. Well, what did you do there? Oh, I was leading a workshop. What kind of workshop? Oh, a storytelling workshop. I work for a storytelling nonprofit. And if they're interested in storytelling, I'm happy to keep going. But I'm not going to throw like the name out. It feels like you're like fishing for something. Like I work with the Moth. Are you familiar? You know, I just want to be someone that's like, okay, so I traveled to San Francisco. What do you like about San Francisco? Or what is your life like? Or aren't our children funny? And this is a funny thing here. Like, I just want like the organic conversation to happen instead of some sort of what either feels like I'm name droppy or feels like, here's what it is. When it starts to not feel genuine, like the interaction, mm-hmm. It's either me dropping a name or someone being like, oh my gosh, I'm obsessed. I want something from you.
Yeah.
I want stage time. I want your feedback. I want like the association. And again, like I'm not hot shit. That's the entire point of this. Like, I just want to be a human being. I don't want to start like playing around with some perception of that. So yeah, around here, it's one thing. In corporate spaces, it's different. Mm-hmm. You know, some corporate people are obsessed. Some people don't know us at all. And I get to be the person that introduces this totally new thing to them. With my family, they are obsessed. My family reunion, we had like a book signing.
Oh, good. That's as it should be.
Yes, my family is very proud, and my mother's family in particular is very achievement focused, and they're very proud of achievements like co-authoring a book or what have you.
What do you feel like at this point you've listened to, I don't know, thousands, millions of stories? A lot of stories.
A lot, yeah.
What's something that stood out to you from hearing all of these stories?
I think a very unique thing about what we get to do. So whether I'm leading a workshop and having someone stand up and share their story, or whether we're getting them ready for stage and having a rehearsal the night before, is I get to be in those moments where people are scared out of their minds and in a really, really real way. And this is Nobel Prize winners. These are celebrities. We have such a diverse range of people that come into a room. And particularly the joke is if you're telling your story in New York City with the Moth, you come to our office and then it's like all of our production team wants to be in rehearsal. You know, it's like, so it's like, oh, it's the entire staff of the organization that's known for storytelling. Be compelling in a room, not even on a theater stage, like with no theatrical elements helping you. And there's something really gorgeous about seeing people at that vulnerable and then pushing through and then seeing the way that the people in the room, no matter who they are automatically on their side. Watching a person who oftentimes was a stranger to me 20 minutes before face a huge fear. People say people's number one fear is public speaking and like second fear is death. And so people would rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy is like the joke. So like I'm watching many people, even if, and like everyone's like, but what about actors? Actors are terrified of being themselves. That's the whole freaking point, you know? Or writers are terrified of having their script taken away from them. They can be amazing storytellers, of course, but it doesn't mean that they are. There's no thing that makes them great, except for if they lean into the terrifying place, which is the vulnerability and the honesty. And I get to watch that. And it's a great equalizer. You know, it just like, it makes me, for all of how I can be like socially awkward or shy, like, it just makes me realize that like everybody has an in. There's a way, you know, everybody has a way to connect with them and a desire to be connected with. And then I get to kind of watch that happen.
Tell me about that in. How do you cultivate a space where people feel safe enough to be vulnerable?
I think every one of us that does this type of stuff has their own toolkit. I think like the simplest thing is you just have to listen. I think we all just want to be heard and we want to be asked about ourselves and then have what we say be valuable. And I think, you know, when we, I want to stop saying I think because I just want to stand by what I say.
Thank you for saying. I think about that so much while I'm editing episodes because I talk to women all day. We all do it, Kate. We all like couch our, you've heard more people tell stories than like just about any other person on the planet. You are a trusted expert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can talk about that. Yes. But yes. No. For sure. For sure. Part of it is that I have the experience and then I have the organization and I have the whatever and the set of expectations. But part of it is just we have to, I think people want to find someone that they would trust to hear that and are looking for that. And I feel incredibly lucky that I get to do that. And it's probably why I've been in my job for 15 years because there's always more people.
There's always more stories. Yeah. And it sounds like really a lot of it is really just the invitation.
Yeah.
To share a story.
Yeah, for sure.
And an audience of people who want to listen. As you talked about the community in your office rooting for someone, I wonder if that is based in that sort of universal fear of being seen and judged. And so when we see somebody step out there, we all kind of want to cheer for them because on a deep emotional level, we all know what it's like to fear being judged.
Yeah. And I think that vulnerability is so gorgeous. And as humans, it's not just my colleagues, like as human beings, we are so drawn to that. And we're so connected. Like that's where the connection is. It's not the polish. It's not cutting out your ums or I thinks or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just saying like, I'm freaking terrified or I'm really, the stories are emotional. People get emotional. We get emotional. I remember one time the first main stage, like full length story I told at the Moth was about the passing of my mother. It's an emotional story. And when I did it in rehearsal, I had never considered this, but in rehearsal, we were on the road, so it wasn't that many people. It was maybe 8 people in the room, including my colleagues, one of whom I'd worked on the story with, who I was close with, and other people who I'd become fond of. And then I told the story, but I could see everyone, and everyone started crying. And I was like, oh, I feel terrible. I'm so sorry. Because you could see the response. It's the most terrifying thing to like actively be making someone cry, but then have to keep going. And then we were all fine at the end and it was lovely, but it was so people are doing that. People are like bringing this vulnerable thing and then watching human beings like in a room just cry at them. And not that we cry at every story, of course, but it certainly happens.
Yeah.
I love to laugh and cry with strangers. That's, I love it.
Me too. It's my favorite. We had a road trip this weekend as a family. And we were going to a funeral, so it was already a sad occasion. But we started a tally to see how many times somebody cried in the car. I won. We listened to Tracy Chapman. I cried.
Yeah.
My husband disciplined my daughter. She cried. You know, I mean, and we were just talking about like, there's so many reasons we as humans cry.
Yeah.
But there's something so intimate just about being real with people. I will admit that I was nervous about talking to you because I was like, I guess, this is a show about stories and I'm talking to the story woman and she like actually knows how to craft stories. And I haven't thought about the Freytag diagram since college. But it is, I think, to your point, if we can just get out of our own heads and start thinking about doing things well or right.
Yeah.
And just be present where we are, really beautiful stuff happens.
Yeah, for sure.
How do you keep yourself brave, Kate?
I don't know if that is my strength. Well, I shouldn't say that. I truly, honestly don't believe that that is my biggest strength. I constantly, like, one of the thoughts racing through my brain in the middle of the night, if I can't sleep, is like, when was the last time I did something that scared me? What scares me? What can I do that scares me? I think there is a degree of, because of so much of my life is spent doing kind of intense things that have to be somewhat unplanned, I am walking on that line. So for example, I will go into a workshop that people have invested in where they want an outcome. But by nature of what we do, I cannot plan every piece. I have to create a space where that can happen. And then I know that things will happen and I have to be confident that they happen in a way that feels, quote, productive, depending on the context that I'm in, but also honest.
Mm-hmm.
Or I have to do a show and I know kind of what the map of the show is. I know what's going to happen sometimes. Sometimes I don't at all, depending on what type of a show it is. And I just have to go and be comfortable with walking that line of like being prepared, but also being prepared to be unprepared. I don't know if that's brave, but it keeps me fresh.
Yeah. To me, it feels alive, those moments. Those moments are really scary to me.
Yeah.
I put a lot of pressure on myself for exactly what you just described. Productive, but real.
Right.
And immediate. And it's my highest level of accountability in life at all times, I think. But it's also what makes me feel alive and gives me a ton of meaning. And yeah.
I mean, I negotiate a lot, speaking of productive, and I just told you about, I don't know if like, I'm like, is it because my mother's family is like a Middle Eastern immigrant family that like really worked, like my grandfather didn't speak English when he moved to the US and, you know, became a businessman that was able to buy his wife's family a home. Is it that, or is it what? And then my dad's family is a whole other thing. But I'm constantly trying to silence the achievement monster.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm bastardizing the words of Jen Romolini. But yeah, so I think I work well in like corporate settings because I will ultimately be productive. I mean, that's a lot of the work that I do, but I'm constantly like, it doesn't have to be productive, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
Just be in the moment. Just be present. Doesn't have, there's no goal. Let it be, you know? And that's definitely something that I try to be mindful of so that it's not all outcome, even though there's so much pressure to have outcomes.
To me, what it really sounds like is it a good use of people's time?
Yes.
And that's a big responsibility. I feel like time is so precious.
Yes.
That every time I have somebody's time, I'm like, I can't waste it.
Oh, 100%. I do not want to waste someone's time. Even if it's a nothing time, I want it to feel, I don't know, real or present or something.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a whole psychology we could unpack on that one. As you do your work, so much of it is holding space for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're very much a coach. Whether it's story coaching or even just caring for your storytellers and helping them feel
safe and courageous.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes energy. So I'm curious how you replenish yourself to keep showing up with that much energy and pouring it into other people.
I really love good food and stiff martinis.
Mm.
And no, I mean, that's obviously, I do enjoy gathering. Our home here is what we, my husband and I, or maybe just me, refer to as sometimes like the family home. We have guests over a lot. We host family a lot. And that really fills me up. That's still like we're setting out the plates and doing the thing, but just like filling the house with joy and people in having meaningful conversations and being goofy and just like blasts of unconditional love is wonderful and multi-generational. My kids are 6 and 9. It's a wonderful time to do that with their friends. I like to read. It's funny. Sometimes it feels like the biggest luxury. But I think sometimes it's like, because it's someone telling me a story and they're just telling it. It's the story is done.
Uh-huh.
Like I don't have to give it notes. It's not seeing if I like, someone talks to me in the middle of a sentence and I put the book down for 20 minutes and pick it up. You know, I don't have to be show that I respect the story, even though I do, I respect writers. So I love to do that.
You just get to be the audience is what you're saying.
Yeah. I like to be the, I like to see good things. Yeah.
You don't have to be a co-creator or support the creation. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That makes so much sense.
I mean, I like to do shows. I like to be on the other side and think about what inspires me. Art begets art, stories beget stories. So hearing other people's experiences and connecting with different people, sometimes it makes me feel very creative. And sometimes, you know, I sit down to write and I'm like, there are no words in this brain this evening. We will close the computer.
Do you write a lot?
No, I try to write a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I have a practice. I write. I try to keep in the rhythm of it, but I also try to, like, there have been times where I'll go a month without working on anything and just be okay with working on any of my own writing and just feel like, is my cup full? Do I feel excited and like I'm feeling and connected with the world and seeing and experiencing new things? Yes, then my own writing is going to not be the priority for this period of time.
I think what you're describing in there is, do I have a creative outlet?
Yeah. Or do I feel, it's not even, because some of it isn't, I guess it's a creative outlet. The reason that I like stumble on that a little bit is because that feels very much about me. Do you know what I mean? Like, am I expressing?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's, this isn't a time where I have anything that I particularly need to get out and to say. This is a time where I want to replenish, where I want to listen, where I want to just connect and take in the world so that I can process it and maybe be creative with it. Sometimes it's just like, well, the, you know, kids had a week off and we had a million adventures. And at the end of the day, I just wanted to like chill, you know, and not communicate with people because I've been communicating intensely with them all day.
Well, and you were creating something different, which
yeah,
I guess the other thing that really strikes me about that is that it is about our definition of creativity, right?
100%. Yeah.
And like creating memories, creating experiences, creating work that lives on is one thing.
Yeah.
I think it's especially for people who are in creative fields, really valuable to remember that the creative cup can be filled in many different ways, and actually filling it in new ways has, generally speaking, great impact on filling it in ways that maybe are more associated with our creative work, or capital C creative.
100%. Yeah. Find that, the shower idea, like find different ways to like have that shower.
Mm-hmm.
And that again has been important for me to learn because of this product, like this achievement mindset of like, oh, I'm failing because I didn't write my 600 words tonight or whatever. Not that I write 600 words every night, but am I living a good life? Am I experiencing the world? Am I giving back to the world? Am I feeling fulfilled and connected? And like, I have a perspective that needs to be communicated in some way. They're all intertwined.
They enrich one another. I think about that a lot in my own career because now I don't have the corporate gig. I consult, I coach, and I do my creative work. And I have to remind myself, like you, that I don't have to do all of those all the time.
Right.
Because they all get better with some neglect.
Yeah, for sure.
And I learn what I need to learn for each one from the other. And often from doing none of them. There's no better creative stimuli than vacation.
Yeah.
Kate, I'm so happy to be connected with you, and I'm so happy to hear a little about your story. So grateful that you're joining us in May at our Uplifters Live event. I think this is just going to be such a special moment for everyone there to get to receive a little coaching and insight from you on storytelling. And within this conversation about doing brave things and going out on our edge a little bit and getting uncomfortable, I think your reminder that that is a universal experience is so reassuring.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely grounded me.
It's also, there's nothing wrong with you because you feel like you don't know what you're doing.
For sure.
It's just actually, I think, a symptom that you're doing things.
Yeah.
Let's keep doing things, some of them unproductive, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you for listening to the Uplifters podcast. If you're getting a boost from these episodes, please share them with the Uplifters in your life and then join us in conversation over at theuplifterspodcast.com. Head over to Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast and like, follow, and rate our show. It'll really help us connect with more uplifters, and it'll ensure you never miss one of these beautiful stories. Mwah! Big love.
Painted water sunshine with rosemary and thyme. Dwell in the perplexing, though you find it vexing. Toss a star and hover, be your own best lover. Relish in a new prime, plant a tree in springtime. Dance with idle hindsight, bring the sun to twilight. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up. Lift you up. Whoa. Lift you up. Whoa. Lift you up. Whoa. Lift you up.
In the pre-chorus, right?
I was like,
"Mommy, stop crying! Mommy, stop crying! You're disturbing the peace."